This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Okay, so here are some of the questions for today. Are the Seattle Kraken done? Now, I know I've asked that before, but after seeing the game last night against the Vegas Golden Knights, and by the way, great comeback by Vegas in that one, just when you thought Seattle had it wrapped up, here comes the Vegas Golden Knights. Marchessault ties it up with 17 seconds left. How'd you like that Chandler Stephenson tip pass? Ooh, juicy, and then Jack Eichel ends it in overtime. Does that mean Seattle's out? And if so, does that mean it's Shane Wright time in Seattle? We'll get into that. What's up with the Pittsburgh Penguins? Outscored 17-2 during this four-game losing streak. They lose to the Ottawa Senators 2-1 in overtime yesterday. Drake Batherson with the heroics. Again, what is up with the Pittsburgh Penguins? Has this team completely thrown the towel in now after trade deadline? Also, six-point lead between the Rangers and the Carolina Hurricanes. We will get into that after a 1-0 Rangers win yesterday. Igor Shesterkin very much back like a vertebrae. Second straight shutout for the Russian netminder. Game two, that was, by the way, and that was a back-to-back. Game two of a five-game and seven-night week for the New York Rangers. So far, so good. Speaking of so good, Buffalo Sabres have been so good. Now, I can't believe I'm actually doing this. They're 5 points out of a wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. Bowen Byram looks incredible on that blue line with Rasmus Dahlin. It seems as if the mantra around Buffalo is just get the puck to Byram and everything will be fine. Case in point, yesterday, as they take care of the Detroit Red Wings, who've now lost six games in a row. Shh, no one tells Steve Yzerman's bosses. Can the Buffalo Sabres do this? Can they? Really? Would be fun. Some meaningful hockey to some fans that could really use a good news story right now. Coming up on today's program, Troy Ryan from PWHL Toronto, their head coach, will stop by bottom of the hour. Speaking of coaches, Rod Brindamore joins me at the bottom of hour two, Carolina Hurricanes head coach. We'll talk to him coming up in hour two, and Greg Wyshynski, it's Wednesday, so that means more MVSW for you. In the meantime, we'll kick it off with Haley Salvian, Sportsnet hockey commentator, also writer with The Athletic. She joins me now. Hello, Haley. How are you?
I'm doing well, but you were having all these coaches on, and then it's just like me and Greg. Sorry to everyone else.
Well, yeah.
You know, sorry to listeners.
Get some X's and O's and get some X's and O's from the coaches, and then you guys can provide the real color and the stickiness and the opinion and the hot goss as well. Haley,
sure.
Bring the hot goss.
Yeah, the tea is what they're saying now, Jeff. Come on.
Yes. No, I know. Listen, I'm about 5 minutes ago, so I can't keep up with whenever anyone references. I got to get the tea on that. I always kind of pause for a second and go, oh, yeah, don't forget, Jeff, you're old. Okay. This story might feel old now because in NHL time circles, 24 hours might as well be 24 days. But hey, Matt Rempe got suspended yesterday. Hey, it was a four-game suspension for elbowing Jonas Siegenthaler of the New Jersey Devils. I don't know that this changes anything for Rempe. I still look at Matt Rempe as a work in progress, whether it's trying to play the game, whether it's being physical, where you can very much accuse him of being sloppy slash dangerous, whether it's a Nathan Bastian hit, whether it's a Labushkin hit, whether it is a Siegenthaler hit, and also we've talked about the fighting issue and maybe trying to protect his chin a little bit more. But A, how did you see the suspension? And B, just do you have a thought on the Matt Rempe phenomenon? They are chanting his name at MSG. They're applauding every time he's near the puck at MSG.
Yeah.
The Rempe phenomenon for you so far, Haley.
Yeah, Rempe mania. I would say that I've been a little bit like neutral on the whole phenomenon, right? Like I'm not, I see the pictures of him, by the way, and his face is just like bruised and swollen and it's stuff like that where I'm like, maybe we should someone do something, but I'm also not saying like ban fighting, don't let him do this anymore. But I'm also not like, yeah, please go get in another fight or like go and get ejected again. You know, like I've been very neutral of like, you know, let's, I try not to like tell fans how to feel, right? Like Rangers fans are having fun with the whole thing. And it's just kind of like, okay, let's see how this goes. Because at the end of the day, when we're kind of talking about the way he's played, like when you look at it, he was ejected the last time he played the Devils. So he's played in 11 games at this point, at the point of the suspension, 4 fights and 2 ejections, and 2 kind of high hits, one that has ended up being a suspension for him. So I do think, you know, it's fun for some of the fans who are watching it, but yeah, it does, like, he's straddling the line, right? And he more clearly crossed it with the elbow and the hit to the head on Siegenthaler, and he got suspended for it. And I know there's been, you know, some fans and some people saying, well, 4 is a little bit more than we thought. And for me, it's like, it's similar to the McAvoy one that happened in October, right? Charlie McAvoy was a first-time offender, I believe. 4 games for the hit to the head for Ekman-Larsson. It's one of those things where... We always, the biggest gripe that we have about player safety and that fans have about player safety is the inconsistency in the number of games for a similar, you know, penalty or a similar play. So I don't have a problem with 4 games. And at the end of the day, like, unless you're a fan who is like living and dying by Rempe being on the ice, like he is, at the end of the day, he's a replaceable player in the Rangers lineup. He's playing under 6 minutes of ice time. You know, he's very physical and it's been fun for fans to watch, but I'm not looking at this and saying like, this is a huge loss for the Rangers in the lineup, but it's certainly a loss in terms of the physical play that he brings and the kind of fun element and the Rempe mania, but I'm not looking at this and saying like, this is an outrage. You know, he hit a guy high and he crossed the line and he got suspended for it. It's pretty black and white for me.
Don't disagree. Off the Matt
you
Rempe
disagree?
Page, very much off. No, I don't. Like I look at the Matt Rempe phenomenon.
I
say that no.
I was like, oh.
No, I said I don't disagree, and I look at the Matt Rempe phenomenon and just kind of like I wonder if Matt Rempe sort of causes a generational divide in some ways. Like there are plenty of, you know, new school hockey fans or newer hockey fans that don't necessarily have an appetite for what Matt Rempe brings to the New York Rangers, where this is almost sort of a wink at, you know, old school hockey fans where like this was commonplace and this is what everybody did. Like even the narrative around, you know, he shouldn't fight every night. That's what all these other guys did. Like that's why I find it, you know, sort of not funny because nothing funny about it, but just like I'm curious about when you hear like Cam Jansen, for example, on the Cam and Strick podcast saying like, you know, he could use some fighting lessons and, you know, I'd like to be able to work with the guy and teach him a little bit here. And we hear a lot of stories about from previous scrappers talking about, you know, maybe not doing it every night and picking your spots more. But, you know, whether it's Ty Domi or Sandy McCarthy or Tony Twist or Bob Probert or Craig Cox, and I can go down the list, like, that's what they all did. I just look at Matt Rempe and I say he's a wink to a completely different generation where every team had guys that used to do exactly what Matt Rempe is doing now.
Yeah.
Does that make
sense? But then you get a guy like Curtis McDermott who was like one of the kind of big heavyweights left, right? Who's saying like, I've kind of lost respect for the kid based on the way he's doing things. So you do kind of get this generational divide, but you also have guys that you would think Rempe would kind of look up to, of the big bruiser type who can drop the gloves with just about anybody, in Curtis McDermott, who's saying like, come on kid, like not like that. So it is a really interesting phenomenon, because again, fans are having a lot of fun with it, and that I feel very in the middle of like, I don't love seeing the pictures of his face all swollen and beaten up, because that's just brutal and you have to just think for life after hockey for a 21-year-old kid. But I'm also not somebody who wants to totally get rid of the physicality of hockey, because there is a fun element to that. But I'm also like, that can't be good for his head. So you get the it's just a very it's been a very interesting thing to kind of watch and see how people are getting split on the whole thing. And again, I think, there's the generational divide, but you've also got the heavyweights being like, come on, guy, like. Not like that. So it'll be interesting to see how this kind of progresses, right?
April 3rd. Not that I've circled the date, but that's the next time the Devils and the New York Rangers face off against one another. Okay. I wanted to ask you about something I didn't get a chance to talk about yesterday. Merrick Light, and that's the NHL Global Series. Now, I love this. Anytime I think you can take NHL hockey and put it somewhere else where there is a very distinct other type of hockey culture. It always makes for some pretty cool hockey, some great visuals, great event, different feel. Like, I thought the Sweden this year was just like a tape measure home run. Now, the games were good and the personalities were there and everything sort of came together, and William Nylander became an even bigger star than he already was. But things really worked. Like, you had like a Swedish flair and the Swedish hockey cultures and traditions, and then there's the NHL games in the middle of it and the NHL athletes. I just loved it. So it is Prague in Czechia. It is Finland as well. There'll be an exhibition game in Munich between Red Bull and the Buffalo Sabres. So it's Sabres and Devils in Czechia. It is in Finland, the Dallas Stars and the Florida Panthers. Not necessarily just a comment on those games, Haley, but just the NHL going to different hockey cultures. I think they should do it on a more consistent basis. I love it. I don't see the downfall at all. I know teams may gripe about travel and coming back and what happens afterwards, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But your thoughts on the NHL and its future internationally, not just like Olympics or World Cup or anything like that, but I'm talking about like NHL teams in Europe playing consistent basis. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's really fun. I think this year, as you mentioned, in Sweden was such a great example of this kind of working in all the ways that you'd hope. Like, I feel like we got more personality clips and like pieces of William Nylander than we've ever gotten in his time in the NHL. And I know there's always like clips. And I know there's a ton of Nylander fans for the way that he plays, for some of the clips you get from him, like his style, et cetera, et cetera. But I feel like we got like a little bit something a little different out of him. Like, maybe it was being home, maybe it was, you know, just some of the fun things that they did. But I do think some of the content, like just the pure content that came out of that, was really great. And it was one of those things where I was like, yeah, William Nylander just got even more famous than he already was. You know, I had people being like, oh, I've got to find these Swedish cinnamon buns that he's talking about. They had them at IKEA, actually, which is kind of fun. So I think it's great. I think it's fun to get like different, you know, see the different visuals, and even just like watching what the vibe is like at the rink, what the fans are doing. And I think it's something that's important for the overall health of the game too, right? Is like, this is a fun thing for the players. Like, we clearly saw that based on like the stuff we saw from like Nylander and guys in the Leafs and being in Sweden. But it's also good for the fans too. You see the lineups of kids trying to meet Nylander, and you see how full the stands are for games like this. So I think there's nothing, again, there's going to be the gripes of, well, the travel, and, you know, it's not necessarily like the results of the games when you're there. It's when you come back. But I think it's great. I have no problem with it. I think the Stars Panthers game in Finland is going to be, you know, potentially an awesome one, because you've got Barkov and Roope hits. You know, I think they both played with Liga teams too, right? They would have played in the arena, that Nokia Arena in Tampere. So I think there's going to be a lot of like really cool ties for those two guys specifically. And those are two players who, you know, they're the ones that everyone, like, maybe after the global series, Barkov won't be the most underrated player in the league anymore. I don't know. Like, he's going to become famous too. We can stop saying that Barkov's underrated when he's just consistently one of the best centers in the league. But Roope hits too. Like, it's going to be a great opportunity and a great platform for two guys to go home and play. And it should be a good game too.
Interesting thing about that one, Dallas, Florida, that could be a Stanley Cup final rematch as well.
Listen, like, I've been on the Stars bandwagon all year.
You don't, I know, and you're right, and they look great, and I know people are sick of me talking about the Dallas Stars on this show and elsewhere, but like, it's true. Like, Florida might be the class of the entire league. They probably are.
And the Dallas Stars are super legit. Yeah, I feel like the Panthers are the best team in the league that we're not talking about as much. Like, I think there's still just been so much about the Avs because of MacKinnon, or the Oilers because of the streak, Vancouver because it's a Canadian market too, and Canucks fans are, you know, loud in the best way. And I feel like the Panthers are the best team in the league that we're not talking about as much.
I don't disagree. Probably should talk more about them.
I think
part of that is like, No, 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 no. I do wonder if a part of that is, too, is I think a lot of people, and by now you realize that it's not fool's gold. I think a lot of people looked at last year, certainly going into this season, and said, like, okay, was last year a fluke by the Florida Panthers? Did they just ride a hot goaltender and then that's it? Because we've seen that before. Now we're this deep into the season, top team in the NHL, and we're saying, like, hang on a second here. That was not fool's gold. That was not a mirage. Now, mind you, they ran out of gas by the time they got to play the Vegas Golden Knights, and that was pretty obvious. But this is a team that might win the Stanley Cup. And this is a team that, in a lot of ways, when you look at all the benefits you get from playing in Florida, namely no tax states, it's a comfortable place to live. It's becoming more of a destination. It's a place where you can win. Like, for the longest time, it was always Tampa that enjoyed that and Florida not so much. But now that Florida is on the sort of sunny side of the winning mountain, and the Tampa Bay Lightning, albeit slowly, are starting to climb down the other side, it certainly appears. I wonder if the Panthers could be the new Lightning here.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I think especially when you see like a guy like Matthew Tkachuk go to Florida and thrive, and you know, seems like he's very happy. I think he was on an episode of the Athletic Hockey Show when I think it was with Craig Custance and Sean Gentile, and he's like, I wear flip-flops everywhere, and it's great, and I love it. And it's just like, that's the vibe that everyone... Yeah. is interested in, right? Because you can be the superstar in the NHL circles, but you can also just go to the beach and walk around and you're not being hounded in the same way. I mean, I could definitely see it, especially as the team gets better and better on the ice. So you're going to have that almost, and I'm sure Tampa's still going to be a destination as long as there's, you know, John Cooper and, you know, certain, you know, stars on that roster. Like, people aren't going to just all of a sudden say, I'm not interested in playing for the Lightning and a great coach and with, you know, elite players. But we're definitely seeing that Florida thing. Like, I think even they were one of those teams that was kind of circled. Like, they've become that team now when there's a guy who could get traded somewhere who's a UFA that might want to sign with that team. It's like, is it he's either going to go to Vegas or Florida or Tampa. Like, Noah Hanifin was a great example of, it was like with Hanifin, it's like, okay, well, if Noah Hanifin's going to go somewhere and maybe sign an extension, it's probably going to be Tampa or Florida or Vegas, right? Like, they've entered that conversation of not just the free agent market, but picking up the UFAs at the deadline who they might end up kind of extending. So they've definitely gotten into that conversation. And they just got like scary depth right now too. Like, they're a team to, I love the way that they play too. I've been saying like, they're one of the most entertaining, like must watch teams in the league this season. They've just been so fun.
Skill, toughness, they can piss you off, they can frustrate you, like you name it, the Panthers can play that way. The other thing, a closing thought on this one, that I do want to move on to a couple of things, and I want to get to Seattle and ask you if they're cooked after last night losing to Vegas the way that they did. The one thing that I don't think that we talk about when we talk about advantages of Florida teams and others, you can throw Dallas into this too, you can throw Nashville into this too, Vegas certainly. What a lot of athletes will talk about is how your body feels in these states, that you're not shivering, you're not cold, and it's easier for recovery, and your body feels good all the time. Like, sure, money is always going to be money. Winning is always going to be winning. And then there is, you know, taking care of yourself day in and day out. And this is where Canadian teams are at a disadvantage, because there's winter here and there's very much winter here, and you better enjoy snow because there's snow here and it's cold here. And when you talk about players, you know, ones that are, you know, listen, 82 games is a long time, and you want your body to feel good for the lion's share of those 82 games. It's a lot easier in a warmer location than it is in a colder one. That's another advantage for a lot of these more southern teams.
It's 14 degrees in Toronto right now, and the sun's not going to go down until like 7:30, and all of a sudden, I don't feel as like sad anymore. It's crazy what happens when you're in a nice place versus in the winter and sad.
Okay, let's brighten things up by asking, are the Seattle Kraken cooked? That game last night was fascinating. Just when you thought Seattle had it, here comes Vegas and the third period and the incredible pass from Chandler Stephenson to Jonathan Marchessault with 17 seconds left. And it's a beautiful goal. And then Eichel scores in overtime. And I don't know about you, Haley, but when that puck went in, I said to myself, Oof. I think Seattle's cooked here. Do you feel the same way? Was that the moment now we started thinking about, okay, maybe it's the right time to call up Shane Wright and get him a little NHL experience and go back to Coachella Valley for the playoffs? But now do we start thinking about next season if we're Seattle?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you look at the standings right now, they're 9 points back of Vegas for the second wild card spot, right? And they've got to pass the Blues, the Wild. I know the Flames are only 1 point back of Seattle. Kraken do have a game in hand, though. So, yeah, I honestly don't know if I've looked at the Kraken as a playoff team for most of this season. Like, I understand watching that game and saying, like, this might be the dagger, especially because it was against the Vegas Golden Knights, who they eventually do need to catch if they are going to make the wild card or the Pacific Division playoffs. But I don't even know if I've looked at the Kraken as a team that, like, yeah, they're going to do it. I think, you know, they've got a -6 goal differential, which isn't as bad when you're looking at some of the other wild card teams like the Blues or the Flames. And their deadline was interesting because they keep Jordan Eberle, but they trade an Alex Wennberg. So I think that you could see that they're kind of playing on the dual tracks of, like, we have to do what we can with, like, the unrestricted free agents and move pieces out, but we also want to think of the future, and we see Jordan Eberle as, like, a core piece of this team in the long term as well as right now, but also in the short term, we got to get rid of some of these pieces. So I think bringing up Shane Wright is in line with that, right? Of, like, this would be potentially a spark for us now if we do think we have a shot, but it would also be good for them in the future to, like, get this guy some reps and get him more comfortable in the NHL, see what you have in Shane Wright as an NHL asset. And then, yeah, put him back in the American League for the playoffs. Like, I think even if they're toast, if they still want to go for it, I don't think bringing up Shane Wright would be a bad thing. Unless you call him up and he's terrible, then you just send it back. But I don't think there's – I think that they should call him up, because maybe that could provide some kind of spark. And then you can also just kind of see what you have in him. So, but I don't know. They've got a 7% chance at cracking the playoffs, according to – our model by Dom Luschishin at The Athletic. And I don't know if I've looked at the Kraken as a serious playoff contender this season. I just think the West is going to be so hard to get out of. And when I'm looking at the Western Conference, I've been thinking of, like, Dallas and Winnipeg, the Avs, Oilers, Kings. Like, the Kraken have just been kind of low on the tier for me. So I think they're probably cooked, as you said, but in a less harsh way.
There we go. We got you there.
Fine. I'm sorry.
We got you there. We got you there, Haley. We got you. We got you. Haley Salvian, cracking her cooked. There you go. Get radioed, Haley, like the rest of us here. Hey, let me ask you about the Pens real quick. So I do want to ask you about PWHL, and it's a big weekend in Detroit and Pittsburgh as well, and what that means for the league and for women's hockey proper. But before we get there, your thoughts on the Penguins. And I don't think there's a team in the NHL that the trade deadline hit harder. Apologies, Calgary. I know you're going through something too. Than the Pittsburgh Penguins. And everybody looks out of sorts, and, you know, Sidney Crosby does. But I don't know that anyone looks quite as down or as out of it or mistake prone right now than Chris Letang. There's pass up the middle on, like, the second shift in the game against Edmonton on Sunday. And then yesterday there was, like, I don't know if gravity just became stronger around Chris Letang, or he didn't sharpen his skates, or what it was. But it just seems like of all the players that were affected by moving out Jake Gensel and essentially waving the white flag here and waving the white towel, as Roger Nielsen did back in the Vancouver days, it's Chris Letang. More so than Crosby, it seems, more so than Malkin, more so than anybody else. He just looks completely out of sorts right now.
I would say that all of the stars look totally out of sorts, but I think you're right with Letang, especially in those two moments you mentioned. In the last 8 games, he's scored 1 goal and he's a -10. I know plus minus isn't always the best barometer for things, but, you know, I do think that kind of speaks to the overall trend that you mentioned. And I think it's been no secret that the Penguins don't really have a significant amount of players who can contribute to any kind of secondary or depth scoring. So what that ends up being is like their stars have to score, and they just lost a star in Jake Guentzel, and the rest of them aren't scoring, and the rest of them aren't playing particularly well. Chris Letang is a huge one. Malkin hasn't even registered a shot in his last three games. Erik Karlsson got an assist on Bunting's goal. That was his first point in eight games. You know, Letang has been just like in a funk for about a week or two, like totally almost blew that game in OT, as you mentioned. And he had a fan pass from Crosby in front of the net. Then he falls, gives the Senators a breakaway. Tristan Jarry has been great, though, at least. You know, I feel like I went into the season thinking, like, the Penguins are going to go whatever way Tristan Jarry does. Like, if he's good, this team's going to make the playoffs. And he's been great, and this team has been all out of sorts because I think that depth just isn't there. And it's created this space where, like, if Sidney Crosby and Chris Letang and Evgeny Malkin and Erik Karlsson are not producing, they don't really have anything going. Crosby, by the way, dashed 12, only two assists in his last eight games. So I agree that Letang's been in a funk, but I would say that the Penguins stars as a collective have been, and that's why we're seeing this result, because they don't really have anything else. You know, that's 11 goals in their past eight games by the Penguins, and it just hasn't been good. Crosby looks completely out of sorts, and if they don't have those guys clicking, like, this team's just doomed. And I think that's the thing where, you know, I think you can point the finger at the previous regime and, you know, some of the moves that Ron Hextall made. But I also think, you know, some of these depth players that were brought in, like, were brought in by Kyle Dubas, and he made some bets on some guys that just haven't worked. Riley Smith, that hasn't worked. The Ryan Graves contract extension, like, that hasn't worked. That doesn't look great, does it? Mm-hmm. So I think the Penguins have some things to fix. Michael Bunting looked good yesterday, though. Woohoo!
I saw Dubas and Spezza look very happy in the box when Michael Bunting, the former, what junior team did he play for again, Haley? The team escapes. Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds scored for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and there was a very happy Penguins box there. Okay, quickly, speaking of Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh will be front and center on Sunday. On Saturday, Little Caesars will be front and center. The PWHL takes their game to venues that we wonder about for the future. So we will see on Saturday, Ottawa and Boston, Little Caesars in Detroit. Sunday, we will see at PPG Paints, the Toronto PWHL team face off against their counterparts in Montreal. The games are the games. We've talked about how much, and I'm going to talk to Troy about this in a couple of seconds, how much Toronto has turned their season around. Montreal is still very much a powerhouse. But what do these games mean in the bigger picture? Like, outside of the points that are, you know, up for grabs here, what does this mean for the PWHL going to these two markets specifically? What do we read into these?
I think it's really easy to read into it and think, like, are these the top of the line expansion markets in the future? You know, I don't think that there's going to be expansion next season. And I think that's, I don't want to say it's a mistake. I just don't agree with the, like, let's hold on and wait idea, because there's going to be a lot of players displaced who won't have a job next season. And I know that's something that happens in women's pro sport. And to an extent, that's pro sport. If you're not good enough to crack the rosters that are there, you got to go find somewhere else to play. But, like, with there's such a good crop of talent coming out of college in Europe, there's going to be a lot of players on one-year deals this year that just aren't. They don't have a career in the PWHL. They'll have one season. So I definitely don't love that. But I do think when we're looking at a Detroit or looking at a Pittsburgh, you know, the Penguins have been, you know, very vocal about their desire to have an expansion team. Like, they went on the record and talked to me about how they are taking steps and they are doing things to have a team, whether it's expanding their practice facility out in Cranberry, which is about like 20-30 minutes outside of the downtown core, whether they expand that to have a rink and a facility for a women's team, whether it's having them play at PPG or having a downtown rink. Like, they are taking steps to do what they need to do to get a women's professional franchise in Pittsburgh. So they've made that very clear. I think a women's team in Detroit would just make so much sense. I don't know if people, like, know this. It's definitely gotten a lot more traction over the last few years, but There is not a Division I women's hockey program in the state of Michigan, which is just crazy, considering the fact that, like, the Little Caesars girls program is huge. Like, there are so many elite women's hockey players that come out of, like, Detroit and the state of Michigan, but they have to go play at Wisconsin or Ohio State or in Boston. Like, they can't play at home. So I think we're going to see a ton of fans in that Detroit game, and I think it would just be such a savvy decision by the league to put a women's hockey team in Michigan, in Detroit, because these little girls who all, like, play hockey in that state, in that city, you know, they go to Michigan, you know, men's team games, or they go to the Red Wings. So I think putting a women's team there makes the world of sense for the health of the game in that state, but also the league. I think that, I don't think there's many tickets left in Detroit. I think they're probably going to break Minnesota's record for attendance in a U.S. market. And the Penguins will, I think it'll be okay. That's a maybe tough weekend. St. Patrick's Day is like a big deal in Pittsburgh. So we'll see if that game
just a little bit
sells out. But so we'll see it. But I think it's going to be exciting, and it's good to get it's kind of the vibe check of what those fan bases could be like in the future, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I can hear everybody in the West already saying, well, when are we going to look at, you know, Seattle or Vancouver or Los Angeles or something in Alberta, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's probably on the horizon. And to your point, not as early as next season, but more somewhere down the road. Final thought. And by the way, I think Manon Rayom does a lot of the work with that Little Caesars Girls program as well in Michigan. Yeah. Anyway, April 20th, this just announced by the PWHL recently, Bell Center. The Toronto-Montreal game, as they look to break another, you just mentioned the Little Caesars and the American attendance record, looking to break the already set Toronto attendance record for women's hockey as well. Do you have a quick thought on this one before we bid you good afternoon?
Yeah, I just think, like, we saw this coming, right? I think you reported it. I reported it, like, the day that Toronto broke the record, which is, like, there's already something in the works. Like, if someone is going to break this record, it's going to be in Montreal at the Bell Center. Like, we can just basically book it at this point. And Corey Schever, even after the game, was like, can't wait to try to break it in our own city. And here we go. And they're going to have an opportunity to do it. And I'm excited to potentially see like 21,000 people at a women's hockey game. I think it's going to be cool. Good bragging rights for the rivalry,
too. It's going to be cool, too. Right. And that'll continue. And now I do wonder about, you know, Scotiabank Arena, Coca-Cola Coliseum for Toronto playoff games as well. If that could be on the horizon. There was, by the way, there was some speculation that the ice is coming out early at Mattamy. I think normally they take out the ice right around this time or maybe a month from now. But I was told on the weekend, no, not true. They're keeping the ice in until July. So they still do very much have that option. Although I do wonder if they go to Coca-Cola Coliseum or Scotiabank. We'll see what happens there. Great stuff as always, Haley Salvian. Thank you so much. Even if it's just like one or two games here or there, whatever, I think they should go to the bigger venue. You have a great rest of your afternoon. Thanks so much for parking a lot of time with me here on the program today. Yeah. Thanks, Haley. You're the best.
Thanks, see ya.
Haley Salvian from The Athletic, Sportsnet's hockey commentator. And you can see her on a number of PWHL games on CBC. Speaking of the PWHL, we're going to pick up that conversation about the Toronto team here coming up in a couple of moments. Troy Ryan is the head coach of PWHL Toronto, a team that has turned things around in a hurry and are now amongst the tops in the PWHL. Maybe the best team right now in the PWHL. How did they do it? Troy Ryan comments in moments as the Merrick Show continues. Don't forget, Hour 2, Greg Wyshynski will be aboard from ESPN. And speaking of coaches, Rod Brindamore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. Very much look forward to that. Coming up in a couple of moments, more on the PWHL. Merrick Show continues. Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360 and wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Okay, spot quiz. Who's the number one team of the PWHL right now? yes, it is Toronto. It's tied in points with Montreal at 30, one fewer game played. However, Troy Ryan is a head coach of PWHL Toronto. He joins me now. Troy, thanks so much for doing this. How are you today?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
The pleasure is all mine. First of all, you know, maybe the obvious question here. You know, we saw Toronto, you know, start off the season in less than spectacular fashion. Nerves, who knows what, chemistry. How did you turn it around? I mean, this is a team that lost, you know, five of their first seven games, and then all of a sudden it seemed that all of a sudden there was a rocket attached to the team's back. What happened here, Troy? Is it all coaching?
I'd like to say, but no, I think it's a combination of things. You know, a lot of times a new team getting together and everybody's trying to find their way. A little bit of nerves right off the start where they're, you know, so excited to be part of this inaugural season, having that first game in Mattamy. You know, it just takes a little bit of time, takes a little bit of confidence and gelling together. But, you know, I think since we overcame some of that adversity at the start of the year, that's going to be probably the magic potion and giving us our success moving forward.
But before I talk about, you know, sort of what's on the horizon here for your team, I want to go back to New Year's Day and the first game against New York. Now, a lot of the athletes have talked about, you know, being overcome with emotion and having to try to, you know, settle down throughout the game. It was such an overwhelmingly emotional experience for so many of these athletes. What was it like for you? How did you handle everything around game one?
Yeah, I would agree with their statements. You know, I've been part of some pretty special games, chock full of emotions. And, you know, I think I could argue that game probably had more emotion for me as well. You know, all that had to happen to make that game possible, from the previous pioneers that have moved this game forward to the emotions that the women on our team were feeling. It was definitely special. I remember stepping on the bench when the lights went out and sort of the show started. And, you know, honestly, my eyes filled up just trying to think and reflect of all the people that are probably impacted by such a powerful moment in women's sports.
Yeah, it was an absolutely wonderful day for the PWHL and all of women's hockey. To your team right now, and a couple of the athletes that I want to sort of pull out here and get your thoughts on. The first one is Kristen Campbell, your netminder, who seems to, much like your team, have really turned things around. You know, I was talking to someone on your team who said, you know, let's not forget here, it's not like she's played an overwhelmingly amount of games in the last 3 years. It's taken her a little bit here to sort of get up to speed. How do you see your goaltender and her evolution so far through this season?
Yeah, I think that's accurate information. And I mean, someone like Supi hasn't played a whole lot. And well, all these athletes were looking for a professional league and a league to play in. Kristen was our a third string goalie on the national team, getting limited opportunities. But when she did get those opportunities, she did very well. But we also know the potential that she's had, you know, a national champion in college. Did her job with the national team and always played very well when we gave her the opportunities. So a lot of when Gina Kingsbury, our GM, drafted her at the inaugural draft, we were drafting her on what we believed the athlete was, the person she was, and the potential that she had. And like any good athlete, they just sometimes need a little bit of a platform, and she just needed a little bit of time to get going. And I think she's definitely in mid-season form now. And the one thing with Supi is she's such a determined athlete, constant reflection. And I think, you know, for her, that makes her successful. She never lost her confidence through any of this. She just continued to get better, and now we're seeing the fruits of her labor.
That shootout against New York a couple of weeks ago, she was flat out spectacular. You know, one of the things that I've heard is, you know, that Toronto specifically, with yourself and with Gina Kingsbury, if you're a national team athlete on PWHL Toronto, it seems as if you're sort of always under the gaze of those that run the national program. And for players on the national team, you know, on visiting or trying to make the national team on a visiting squad, they can almost sort of try to step out of themselves to distinguish themselves or to get you or Gina to notice them. Does any of that resonate with you? Like, I mean, I'm sure you've heard it before. It's like, oh, geez, it's Troy and Gina. Like, they're heading up the program. They're looking at me with national eyes as opposed to PWHL eyes. I'm sure you've heard this before.
Yeah, we've heard that. You know, I guess it's tough to determine whether it's factual or not. I know for myself, you know, I tend right now to be a little bit different even in my role here in Toronto than I am at times with the national team, where this started so quickly. You're trying to gel your team together as quick and as fast as possible. You know, and I think that's an underlying thought that a lot of athletes may have, but I also think it's potentially a good thought. I mean, these are professional athletes now, and the excellence that they need to perform on a daily basis, maybe that extra little bit of pressure when they're coming into Toronto or playing for Toronto is good for the overall game. So if that is an underlying thought they have, hopefully they learn to manage it. And, you know, I think it's important for Gina and I to manage it as well. We try to completely separate the two and use the PWHL platform as a good opportunity for scouting and recruiting for Hockey Canada as well.
You've known a lot of these athletes for a number of years. What did they find the most different or profound playing in this league as opposed to their lives previous to the PWHL? You know, I was talking to, you know, Laura Stacey not too long ago, and a lot of our conversation revolved around how shocked everybody was when that Minnesota-Boston trade went down, and everybody said, whoa, like, we knew this was possible, but now we really feel it and experience it and know that it's very much a thing. What has the experience been like playing in this pro loop for a lot of the athletes that you already know?
I think, as you mentioned, stuff like that, like, you know, the potential of a trade, free agent period, a draft, these are all things that the women have not had the opportunity to experience. And, you know, even now where a lot of athletes are on one-year contracts, so the pressure that comes with being on a one-year contract and trying to earn that second or third year, trying to maybe even increase the money that you're getting in the contract, I think these are all dynamics that are going to be learning, you know, steep learning curves for our group. And, you know, I know our organization, in particular Gina Kingsbury, has done a great job. Like, anytime, you know, either a player release happens or a signing happens, she's done a really good job of just educating our group and using every example or every situation as an opportunity to teach people and get them more comfortable with the situation. So steep learning curve for the athletes, steep learning curve for staff, but just something we're working through together.
With Troy Ryan, head coach of PWHL Toronto, they face off against Montreal in Pittsburgh at PPG Paints Arena. There we go, on Sunday. Okay, a couple of your athletes really quick. Does Renata Fast ever get tired?
Not at all. She's a freak athlete. It's unbelievable the amount of minutes she can play, and I don't think her game ever drops a bit. She's physical. She's fast. She's incredible. Probably the best athlete I've ever coached.
Is there, I know there's always a temptation, like as soon as you see her catch her breath on the bench, you want to throw her out there. But is there any thought to, you know, as the season starts to wind down, eventually maybe manage some of the minutes? I mean, she's playing upwards between, you know, 35 to 40 on a lot of these nights. Is that a consideration here at all?
Yeah, I think it's something that's been, it's kind of pushed through the media a lot, that we clearly and closely track the minutes. I don't think she's got into that 40 range. You know, we track her on a daily basis. You know, we give her breaks. We'll give her time off practice if need be. Obviously, we want to make sure that the, you know, 4 to 6D are continuing to grow their game so they can log more minutes. But right now, we're very comfortable with the amount of minutes that Fast and LaRocque play. Our strength and conditioning coach, Jeremy Steinbach, does a great job monitoring their fitness and their volume and their load. We manage it. I think, and then the professional side of both of those athletes, they'd be very open and honest with us on whether they're able to go or not.
Okay, the this is a league that, much like the American Hockey League previous, isn't shy about trying new things and trying new rules. And whether it's the jailbreak rule or the latest with, you know, the first place team being able to select their opponent in the opening round. I mean, this is a league that's already grabbed headlines for how they're conducting business. I want to get to you on that first place issue in a couple of seconds. But what do you make of the jailbreak rule? And that is, for the uninitiated, you score a shorthanded goal, you have actually killed the penalty. Your player comes out of the box. What did the coach think when he initially heard this idea proposed? And what do you think of it now?
Yeah. There's a little bit of a traditional thinking from me, but honestly, when I first heard that, I never thought of that before. I never heard of anybody even discussing that type of rule before. But when the league brought it forward and we were able to try it down in our preseason camp in Utica, I thought it was outstanding. Maybe selfishly because we have, you know, the Emma Maltes and the Blair Turnbulls of the world that
yes.
really deal with a lot of pressure and a lot of aggressiveness. But I love it. I think it adds a different dynamic to the game. It makes coaches think the game a little bit differently. And now it adds just an extra dynamic to power plays and penalty kills. I think the fans get into it, and it's probably been one of the most exciting parts, the amount of times that it's happened this year, and to see that player come out of the penalty box and join in the celebration just adds a whole level of excitement to the game.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. Let me close on this one. I'm curious about the criteria that you would use. Like right now, people go to the PWHL website, they'll see, although you're tied with Montreal at 30 points, Toronto's on top in first place. If the season ends like this and PWHL Toronto is number one and you get to select your opponent in the opening round, home ice is still kept for number two. What's the criteria that you would use? Is it your record against them? Is it, you know, health of both the teams? Like, what criteria would go into making that decision?
Yeah. Well, I'd love to be able to answer it in full detail now, but we're not there yet. Obviously, we're taking care of the regular season. And I do think I wouldn't have the ability to answer it fully myself anyway. I think it will be a collaboration. It'll be a full discussion with our general manager, but it'll also be something that we bring the athletes into the conversation as well. So I think it's going to be a lot of details. It won't be as clear as just our record against them in the regular season because it's such a small size as well, but a little bit of collaboration.
Sure.
But we're not there yet. We've flirted around with it a little bit, but we're not quite there yet to outline the full process.
Well, I'm sure you'd love to get there and have the burden of that decision. Troy, thanks so much for stopping by. Congratulations on turning this thing around. Good luck this weekend in Pittsburgh at PPG. I cannot talk today. First day with the new tongue. PPG Paints Arena. There we go. In Pittsburgh. All the best, Troy. Thanks so much for stopping by.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Jeff.
There he is. Troy Ryan is the head coach of PWHL Toronto PPG Paints Arena. You know, I will tell you at the top of the hour break, I'm going to practice saying that over and over and over again so I don't mangle it with my tongue anymore. Okay. And we thank Troy Ryan for stopping by. Much appreciated head coach of the PWHL's Toronto squad, right now tops in the league. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book. Bet local today. It is the Avalanche at the Vancouver Canucks. Only four games tonight around the NHL. This one's a good one. Avalanche -1.5. The total has gone under in five of Colorado's last seven games. Colorado 6-1 straight up in their last seven. Vancouver 4-1 straight up in their last five games. Vancouver 13-7 straight up in their last 20 games when playing at home against Colorado. And the total has gone over in four of Vancouver's last six games against an opponent in the Central Division. Listen, the big headline story around Vancouver is Thatcher Demko week to week. We all saw that on Saturday where he pulled himself out of the net despite winning a winning situation. And we all went, uh-oh, this doesn't look good. This doesn't sound good. And Rick Tocchet yesterday saying the dreaded words, week to week. So that is the big story around the Vancouver Canucks. Colorado coming off a win last night against the Calgary Flames. 6-2 is the final there. Nathan MacKinnon now has 113 points. Casey Mittelstadt finds the back of the net. So Colorado hitting a real stride here. You can expect Alexander Georgiev in net for Colorado in this one. And to sort of cushion the blow of Thatcher Demko, if you're a Vancouver Canucks fan, I'm sure you've already done this. You have a look at the schedule for Vancouver for this month while Thatcher Demko is out. Again, week to week. So there's a game against the Avs, and tonight's going to be a real tough one. There's the Capitals, the Sabres, the Habs, Calgary, Los Angeles, Dallas, and Anaheim. That is a very forgiving week for a team that is going through a very key injury. I think there's enough space that Edmonton can't catch them. We shall see, but it's not as bad as it sounds with Demko being out right now. That's Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Rod Brind'Amour, head coach of the Canes, and Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, next.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Tough loss for the Carolina Hurricanes last night, 1-0 at the hands of the New York Rangers. Tomorrow they'll face off against the Florida Panthers, and then on Hockey Night in Canada Saturday, they will face off against the Toronto Maple Leafs. So lots of good games on the horizon for Rod Brind'Amour's team. Rod Brind'Amour joins me now on the Jeff Merrick Show. Rod, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. Not too bad.
Give us, if you can, a snapshot of where you see your team right now. Trade deadline has come and gone. There's some new faces in the mix here now and a couple new lines. Give us a snapshot of where the coach thinks the team is at this point.
Well, I think, you know, we love the additions. Way too early to kind of make any assessment. You know, we got to just kind of give it a little time to get these guys integrated into what we're doing and get them up to speed. Both guys have been out with action for a long time, so I think it's going to take a little time to just, you know, figure it all out and get the right combinations and all that. But obviously, they're two, you know, really good players, and excited to have them.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking on the show yesterday about how, you know, it is pretty delicious that it is a former Pittsburgh Penguin and a former Washington Capital coming together on the same team now to help the Carolina Hurricanes try to win a Stanley Cup. I'm curious, the decision-making in your head on behalf of you here, like, what goes into making that decision that, you know, after Don Waddell makes the move to bring these two in, you decide you're going to put them together on the same line with Martin Nečas. What goes into that?
Yeah, well, to be honest, we know we're going to move that around. You know, it's finding the right fit. And we had two guys come in new. I mean, honestly, it was a lot of it had to do with the matchups that we had. And then a lot of it was, too, you're looking at, okay, well, let's mess up one line, not three right away, or two lines, you know, so just put those two guys together, and a lot of learning on one line, but maybe not so much on the others, and you know, they played well, too, that, so, yeah, I don't know, hockey's hockey at the end of the day, you know, these guys know how to play, and yeah, maybe not exactly how we're wanting to do it yet, but you got smart hockey players, and they can figure it out quickly.
You've coached against Jake Guentzel and against Yevgeny Kuznetsov for a number of years. What did you think about them both before they were members of your team?
Yeah, well, you know how talented they are. I mean, that's something that you doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that when you're playing, you know, even watching. You know, you're coaching against them for sure, but you can see the talents there. And, you know, you're always worried when they're on the ice. So you're always like that. And it's the other pieces you don't know. You know, what kind of people they are, you know, teammates, et cetera. And then you do a little homework on that, and you know, that's where guys that have played with guys come into play and all that kind of thing. But so we know we got, you know, Guentzel, listen, that guy's been an all-star and point-of-game guy, and we know Kuzi what he's capable of. You know, he had a little tough go here, you know, lately. But, I mean, if we can get him at all – back to where, you know, he's capable of or even close to that, I think it's a pretty good deal for us.
Because Kuznetsov specifically, who in your group, and I'm referring to players specifically, who's the one that, and maybe there's a couple of guys, that bring him into the nest? I mean, you mentioned that's been a tough go for Kuznetsov, and we all know about the issues that he's faced. Who's the player on your team, or who are the players on your team that make sure that, you know, he gets acclimatized to the team as quickly as possible?
Well, that's honestly, I think it falls on everybody to some degree, and your leaders, you know, we've got, that's the one thing that's really good about this group is we have great veteran guys, and they understand what it's like to, number one, come to a new team, you know, and then two, have personal issues and family issues and all that kind of thing. And you know how hard that can be. So, whether it's Jordo or Burnsy or, you know, these guys have been through a lot in their careers. So that I think helps. And then we do have players that have played with, you know, Kuzi and Orly's here. So I think right away, just being able to stay with him helps, just, you know, having some familiarity with someone. And then he gets his family here, and that's a big deal, right? Having your family around you, I think that helps. So everybody kind of takes a piece of it. It's just being aware that every day you kind of have to check in and make sure that, you know, everything's going in the right direction.
Let me ask you about Jacob Slavin. He's one of my, first off, he's one of my favorite players. Second of all, one of my favorite players to watch. And I'm curious what you see in Slavin. One of the things that I was talking about the other day with him is one of my favorite things when I'm watching Carolina games is watching players try to either put the puck behind him, get around him, get the puck underneath his stick. I know we hear good stick a lot around the NHL, but to me, it really applies to Jacob Slavin. What do you see as his coach in Jacob Slavin?
Well, we're spoiled, right? Like whenever you have a player that I've seen him forever. Then you had him around, you certainly don't take it for granted, but I don't want to say don't appreciate, because we really do appreciate him. But you know what I mean? You see it every day. It kind of gets, you get used to it. And, you know, he is what you said there, but all the little things. And that's what makes him such a great player. It's funny. Generally, when we see him make a mistake, it's shocking. Like, it's because it doesn't happen. You're like, whoa. You know, where everyone's doing these all games wrong. All of a sudden you see one of him, you're like, whoa, what just happened there? And, you know, because it just doesn't happen very often. And that's hard to do in the NHL, right? As you know, like, I mean, it's a game of mistakes, and he's just that good. And, you know, it's funny when goal goes in or something against him, most of the time it's like a bad break, you know, or something happened. There's just no way you could have done anything differently. So, you know, very, very talented. But then I go to the other point that I love about him the most, is just such a good dude. And, you know, he gets it, right? So really, really fortunate to have been able to work with him for as long as I have.
You know, when the game gets to overtime, there's a few combinations that I think we all like to watch. Certainly, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in Edmonton is one of that we look at and say, okay, well, that's probably as close to automatic as we're going to find. Yeah. Your team has that as well, whether it's, you know, Aho with Natchez or whomever. Like, who in your mind are you just happy to put out there in overtime and you say, you know what, this is as close to automatic here, guys. You can start cutting your laces.
Well, I don't think there's ever that, but you certainly, you know, we have, you know, you mentioned Marty Natchez. He's a special player in that regard, where he's really looking forward to it, right? Because it's a lot of ice, and he can skate so well, and you know that time of a game is where he really shines. So definitely love it when he gets the puck in overtime. You mentioned Aho. These guys too. I mean, there's anybody that's quick and has some skill in the league. That's kind of the guys you mentioned. They love playing in overtime, and we're fortunate to have a couple guys. We've added a couple now too, so I haven't gotten overtime yet with everyone, but it'll be interesting to see when that happens.
With Rod Ridmore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, how hands-on are you, or are you completely hands-off with your netminders?
I'm pretty hands-off, I would say. You know, I talk to the goalie coach every day, and we're, you know, really in communication there. But when our goalies show up, I'm generally, listen, glad to have you, glad you're here. If you have any problems away from the rink or you know, something's bothering you, come see me. Otherwise, go to Paul, you know, our goalie coach. And we keep it that simple. Yeah. And I just feel like that's Paul's job. He's got two guys, in our case, three, sometimes four guys to worry about, mm-hmm. and that's it. So I don't need to get involved in that unless I have to. So that's kind of how we do it. You know, I think that's just takes one less thing off my plate as well.
A couple of more here, Rod, before I let you go. One, trade deadline is now come and gone. These are the teams. These are the players. What is your mentality now from here until the playoffs, whether it's rest, whether it's health, whether it's points, whether it's wins? Like, what's the theme now for the Hurricanes in this sort of stretch to the end of the regular season?
Well, we gotta get there first. And so, like, I don't like really – looking too far ahead, things to change too quickly. And, you know, you plan too far ahead and plans blow up. So we really, you know, it's old school, but we really focus on one day at a time and try to put our best foot forward every day. And that's it. So we got to practice today. Okay, let's be good. You know, obviously you go short because the time of the year and all that, and you're cognizant of the rest and the wear and tear because everybody's playing a million games now at the end of the year. So, it was one of our I don't even know when I'll practice again, but so you're cognizant of that, but we just try to go out and do our best every night and try to win every game, and hopefully that'll be good enough.
Let me finish up here by asking you about Seth Jarvis. When Elliot and I were in Vegas for the Players Tour, he was one of our favorite interviews. He's such a charismatic guy, great hockey player as well. He talked about, you know, dedicating himself to fitness in the off season. And I think he said he's not eating Skittles anymore. I can't remember what the candy was. He was throwing that in the garbage as well. What have you seen with Seth Jarvis this season? 20 goals, 30 assists, 50 points so far.
Well, we, you know, we love the kid. He's got a great personality. Like you kind of got to see. That's how he is every day with us. So it's refreshing. I think the guys love him for it. His game, certainly, I don't know. It's hard to say that it took another step because, to be honest, I thought he played really well last year. He just it didn't get rewarded for how good he was playing. Very consistent mm-hmm. for the most part. And I think he's just, you know, as a kid matures naturally, you get stronger and more confident in the league. And if you actually put in a little work, you know, it's amazing what can happen. And I think maybe mm-hmm. that's what he did in this off season. And, you know, if he continues to do that, you know, I think, you know, he's just going to keep getting better. So, you know, again, the young player we have, and really excited to see where his game's going to go, because I do think there's another level.
Certainly. Rod, thanks so much for joining me today. Much appreciated. Good luck against the Panthers tomorrow, the Maple Leafs on the weekend, and the rest of the season. Thanks, as always, for stopping by.
All right, Jeff. Yeah, buddy. You got it. Take care.
Rod Brind'Amour is the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. A little speed wobble last night against the New York Rangers. Now the gap, by the way, in the Metropolitan Division, that was a huge one for Carolina. Man, the Shesterkin looked good. The gap is now at 6. Between the Carolina Hurricanes and the New York Rangers. And we thank Rod for stopping by and the communication staff for making him available, as always. So a couple of things for tonight. Yesterday was 10 games. Hope you enjoyed it. Today we're down to 4, but some big ones as well. Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Tonight you can see the Nashville Predators face off against the Winnipeg Jets. This is an intriguing one for a lot of the obvious reasons. Two really good teams. One of them, a real surprise team, certainly in the Nashville Predators. And the other one, like Winnipeg Jets, continue to be one of the best stories around the NHL. And always enjoy watching them. The pregame gets underway, Hockey Central, 7 o'clock Eastern. And then the game gets started in Winnipeg just after 7:30 Eastern. Watch that one on Sportsnet. Meanwhile, later on in the evening, you can see the Washington Capitals, who I don't know if I mentioned this yesterday, probably have the worst schedule of any team in the NHL from here until the end of the season. Like, I know we're all wondering about, okay, who can creep in and what their percentages are of getting into the postseason and grabbing a wild card spot. And at times, We've wondered about the Washington Capitals. Despite the fact that we most recently saw Brian McClellan, general manager, throw in the towel and talk about the future and talk about the kids, etc. They've had some big performances. Alexi Protas has been really good. Sonny Milano has been really good for them. The old guy, Ovechkin, is scoring goals again. So we've wondered about them. But their schedule from here until the playoffs is brutal. And that includes tonight, where the Washington Capitals face off against the Edmonton Oilers. You can watch this one on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet West. And I wonder if the Oilers are now thinking, now with Thatcher Demko out, does this mean maybe, just maybe, we can catch the Vancouver Canucks for top spots in the Pacific? There is a 10-game swing, a 10-game gap, rather, or 10-point gap, rather. The Edmonton Oilers with three games in hand on the Vancouver Canucks. I think Vancouver's fine here. That's a lot of points to make up. Vancouver's, I think they're not playing good hockey, but the Thatcher Demko injury does throw at least a question mark into things. And speaking of the Vancouver Canucks, you can watch them in action tonight as they face off against the Colorado Avalanche. The Kings and the Blues are your early one tonight. Thanks to all of our guests. You heard from Rod Brindamore a couple of moments ago, Greg Roshinsky, Troy Ryan, the head coach of PWHL Toronto, and Haley Salvian, and our crew, David Siss, Lance Kennedy, and Jen Rolnick, all turned in tremendous performances. All the mistakes and mispronunciations, PPG Paints Arena, I'm looking your direction, were all courtesy of me. Back tomorrow across the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360. Have a great afternoon.